And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
This is our Friday the 13th edition.
Yes, and Brian, you are celebrating your 10-year anniversary at Microsoft.
That's right. Actually, it happened last month, was June 17th, was the official day. But, you know, I've been traveling, tech ed, we had a week off for July 4th, and now I'm officially.
Did you get M&M's?
I did not get M&M's.
Why not?
Nobody needs that. The tradition is you get M&M's, but I'm actually
1 pound of M&M's per year.
Per year, that's a lot. Have you seen how many M&M's that is?
Yes, I bought 10 pounds of M&M's.
I know,
last year.
And I'm carrying around a pound of those still. So I'm trying to lose some weight actually. Nobody needs that.
I just want you to know the M&M's are not for you. They're for us.
They would end up being for me.
No, they're for us.
I'll give you $5 and you can go buy your own pound of M&M's.
Oh, la-di-da.
Let's jump right into our top story, which is Windows 8 RTM has been announced to be coming the first week of August. Of course, they didn't say August of which year. I'm assuming that's 2012, but maybe they're holding that out on us there.
109 languages, 230 markets worldwide, starting in October there's maybe two dates that people know. Release to manufacturing, that's when the disk is gold, sometimes they
right,
say.
Right.
We stopped writing the software. And then general availability, that's when you can walk into, say, a Best Buy or any of these computer stores and actually buy a copy off the shelf.
Right. So the one question that I have not seen answered, I've tried to find an answer out there, is whether or not it will show up for MSDN and TechNet subscribers. So that question has been asked a few times. If you're familiar with previous releases, usually it does show up in those channels either the week or a few days later.
But nothing
RTM,
official.
But nothing official yet. So as soon as we find out, we'll let you know. Fingers crossed there.
Cool. Now, the other cool thing is Jason Zander, of course, tweeted that at the Worldwide Partner Conference, which is where both of these announcements were made, we are going to actually have Visual Studio 2012 RTM in early August with Windows.
That's right.
So both products will RTM at the same time, which is awesome.
Which is probably the worst kept secret ever, that Windows 8 and Visual Studio 2012 will RTM together, because they've kind of been lockstep for every other milestone.
Sure.
But it is good to officially have that that information.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's exciting. Yeah.
Now, TechEd Europe, we did TechEd Europe 2 weeks ago.
That's right.
There are over 340 sessions recorded right now on Channel 9 as well, and a number of things. And I think one of the interesting areas is there's a Windows Phone. What's new for the next version of Windows Phone? So
since
when we started talking, TechEd US happened, we had the announcement of Surface and the announcement of Windows Phone 8, then TechEd Europe happened. They actually added a Windows Phone 8 session to TechEd Europe, which I think is going to be interesting for developers looking to target that future platform.
Right, exactly. So check out that content. You know, again, if you've already checked out the North America content, most of it's going to be the same.
Yep.
But speaking for myself, North America ended up being a nice opportunity to iron out some of the kinks in some of my sessions. So maybe some of the other speakers did the same thing, where, you know, demos work better.
Yeah, I had parts that I think were like this.
Right.
So
if you could just do a mashup of the best pieces.
That's exactly what I would want to do.
Yeah.
In all honesty.
Yep.
But
so it's cool.
Sessions are available.
I love this brave new world where all session content just shows up online and you can check it out whenever you need to.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of cool stuff to check out.
Yeah. So what's this, Dan?
So this is the Windows 8 release preview, and what they've done is built the hands-on labs that I think we've talked about before. Let's say, for example, you don't want to install Windows 8 preview, you can actually launch a virtual lab, and you don't have to, you know, no setup, installation, it's basically a remote desktop. You go through a couple clicks, and you can get a Windows 8 RP machine, release preview machine, provisioned for you and a hands-on lab document. So, for example, if you want to learn just the intro of the application, or sharing contracts, or how the process lifetime works, what happens when my app goes down and I need to rehydrate it. So, for example, if I'm in an application, I'm on page 3, you want to save that setting so when the user, if the application gets suspended,
right?
it effectively knows its state right. and can rehydrate that state.
Yeah, so these virtual labs are great. They really provide a friction-free experience for you to jump right in there, even if you haven't had time to install the release preview and everything else. The one thing that I'll share as a result of trying other virtual labs, I haven't tried this one, is that if you have trouble connecting to the virtual labs, there is a set of instructions that explains what port you have to have open, kind of the security settings, the ActiveX controls you have to enable, that sort of thing. So I'm assuming this is very similar. It looks like the same infrastructure. But once you get going, it's a really nice way to check it out.
Awesome. Yeah, so definitely cool stuff. So Windows 8 developers should what they should know about the cloud. What is this?
Right. So this is just a quick article that goes through and describes some of the key concepts that you should think about as a Windows 8 developer, and really, in my opinion, any developer when you're building Windows 8 applications with the power of the cloud. And so some of the things that they talk about in here are the different options for working with the cloud. So one option, of course, is SkyDrive. So if you're going to let your users work with documents and other artifacts that they may want to save and pass back and forth across to other users and that kind of thing, then they talk about using SkyDrive as one ability to do that. Another thing that they talk about is if your application, let's say you build a photo application that's meant to aggregate apps from different sources like Facebook and Flickr and Windows Live and that kind of thing, one of the suggestions they have is actually have your cloud application do that aggregation in the cloud and then pass everything down as a unified set to the device so that you're not making your forcing your user to have to aggregate all those sources individually. So there's just some core patterns and practices, if you will, for working with cloud within Windows 8 that actually makes sense for a lot of different applications as well.
Cool. So creating Metro-style apps that stand out from the crowd. So this application kind of walks through, and it's a kind of a before and after example, but it explains some of the things that you want to do. So It walks through an example that shows basically a news application. One of the challenges with news applications today is you open up on a page and it's just that section. So it's say top headlines, and then you see a nav bar for all the different sections. Well, there's no if, for example, you have to go into sports, if you have to go into business section, you have to manually click into those areas and then jump back to see if there's something interesting. One of the reasons they really like the ability to have those long panoramic is it's designed for exploration. In other words, you know what, here's the news section, but I see that there's business. And you start swiping, oh wow, all the sections are there and I get the top headlines in one experience. I don't have this big hierarchy of levels,
this tree of content that you have to build in your mind about how did I get back there. Yeah,
right, exactly. And it's like, okay, so I can easily scan all the headlines, I can maybe do a semantic zoom to jump back just to the different sections that I want, and then be able to go into that area and some of the different things for that. So it really walks through step by step and some of the thinking and scenarios that they have for differentiating your applications.
That's great. That's cool. So if you're into any kind of GPU development with Visual Studio, chances are Daniel Moth is not a stranger to you. He's an excellent evangelist for his technology, and he's also a developer on the team that builds technologies like C++ AMP, which is the I've already forgotten what it stands for. Accelerated Massively Parallel Technology. It basically allows you to leverage the power of the GPU within your applications to do really fast math operations and that kind of thing. And he has a really great screencast here that he goes deep on. The one thing that he does say is that as a prerequisite for understanding this screencast, he's assuming that you totally understand matrix math multiplication implementation in C++ AMP. So this is not for everybody, but if you are the type of person that needs to get in there and debug the CPU, or the GPU rather, then this is a great resource, and I would encourage you to check out Daniel's blog and whatnot.
Cool. Great stuff. Now, another fun one is the Sanda, which is a code search engine with open APIs. So, and I think the cool part is the Visual Studio integration of this. So you want to talk about this?
Yeah. So, he basically comes out and he says, hey, look, you know, code search in IDE is something he uses not too nice words, but he basically says that it's something that really hasn't been evolved in, many, many years. And so a lot of the time when you're searching for code, you want to do things like, do fuzzy matching, right? So if I'm searching for, a variable with a certain name, maybe find other variables that are similar to that or other blocks of code that look similar. similar, kind of like the code clone capability that we added to Visual Studio 2012, where I can search for any blocks of code that look semantically similar, even if they aren't syntactically identical, mm-hmm. or even if they aren't even the same object. Maybe they derive from some core base object and perform similar operations.
And that's to remove, you know, duplication.
Code clone is primarily targeted at removing duplication, or hey, I need to fix this bug in this one block of code. Where else do I need to fix it? That kind of scenario. And so this guy David Shepard, he actually went out and he applied this to this similar set of searching to just code searching across Visual Studio. Mm-hmm. And so he's got a video that goes through and shows you how to use it. But it's just a beautiful looking add-in. I'm excited to install this. It just came out earlier this week. So really, really nice stuff.
Yeah, and it is on CodePlex.
It's on CodePlex.
So you can see how it's built, mm-hmm. which I also love. This is by John Bowen, and it's a post on portable libraries, making it your go-to project template. So the goal here, and I think it's more of almost evangelism, I would say, is rather than saying you have to add a class library, file new class library, don't. Make your default template whenever you're adding code the portable class library template. So when you do that, file new, don't choose class library, choose portable library project. And a lot of that is, hey, we're building a Windows Phone application. Do you really want to have to re-implement everything for Windows 8 or whatever the framework is, .NET Framework 4.5, where we have this core logic? Why not make that the default, so you're designing for reusability.
Portable by default. I love it. Yeah.
Portable by default. Yeah. So, and certainly we face this a lot, and portable class libraries have improved so much in the future. So the ability to do .NET Framework 4, Windows Phone,
Windows
8 Metro-style applications,
even
Silverlight,
Xbox.
And some Xbox, mm-hmm. exactly. Yep. So just a ton of things, and I couldn't agree with this more.
Yeah. That's great. Another article here, we have pragmatic tips for building better Windows Phone applications. And what I love about this is it's a From the Trenches post by Andrew Byrne, where Andrew has written a lot of Windows Phone applications, and he's basically saying, hey, learn from my mistakes. So things like, you can't use multicast in a cellular connection. I wouldn't have known that had I not read it here. Things like he's been burned by not testing responsiveness on 256 megabyte devices. So now that we have those lower profile devices that are hitting the marketplace, make sure you're testing for those types of things. Another one, use Isolated Storage Explorer to test storage within your application. So this is,
and we've talked about that tool as well.
Exactly.
It's one of those hidden gems.
Yep. And so certainly this isn't an exhaustive list. I'm sure you could interview 10 Windows Phone developers and get 10 different lists. But this is always a good one to look at as a Windows Phone developer. And I think actually that a lot of these concepts also would apply to Windows 8 application building as well.
Okay, great. So that means it's time for Picks of the Week!
Picks of the Week. So so this is my pick of the week. This is actually one of my favorite sessions from TechEd North America. Of course, I'm a little bit biased towards TFS and ALM content, but it's my pick of the week, so I'll mm-hmm. pick what I want to. And so this session is a session by my good friend Jeff Levinson, who has written several books about TFS, and his current role at Boeing is he runs the team that's responsible for maintaining the TFS infrastructure at Boeing. And so if you think about a company like Boeing, those guys, I mean, first of all, thousands of developers all around the world, and they have to think about building everything from .NET applications to COBOL applications. They have to maintain projects that run from maybe a couple of weeks, where maybe you're updating the in-screen flight controls or something like that, to projects that last 10 years. So how do you run he says, how do you run a 10-year project using Scrum with like 1,000 iterations or something? You just can't do that, right? And so the common denominator for him is to be able to support all these projects across the company using TFS, and he shares his tales from the trenches about how he's managed to do that, and it's not without its challenges, but he's made it work for them.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much when you start thinking about this area, even just security mm-hmm. alone, and processes for check-ins and everything that you want to do to make sure that, planes in the air
yep.
and it's working. Like, how can you actually implement a process
right.
that enables you that you know, we're going through all of our checks and balances for the code that we check in.
Right, and one of the things he discovered, it's really kind of, from his perspective, it's about this meta process that he can apply to all of the TFS projects that are going on, and then allow some degree of control by the individual project leads to have freedom within that meta process to define their own microprocess, if you will. So, really cool stuff.
Very cool stuff. Now, my pick is Karsten has the newest build for Visual Studio Achievements that now works with Visual Studio 2012 RC, the release candidate. So, this is cool because a lot of people have been asking for Visual Studio 2012 support. Mm-hmm. And probably one of the funnest ones is we actually have an achievement. So if you have used VS 2012 on RC on Windows 8 RP.
Nice.
So you use Windows 8 RP, VS 2012. Yeah, exactly. You're kind of cutting edge. We have a Brave New World achievement.
Nice.
So for those of you that are doing both, you should definitely check it out. And certainly there are differences between the 2010 and 2012 versions that we had to build different binaries for, mm-hmm. and so on. But it's now available.
Aldous Huxley reference. I love that.
Yes.
So that's cool. And so for people that aren't familiar with the achievements model on Visual Studio, do you want to give a quick... It's just gamification to Visual Studio, right?
Yeah. So the idea is you're using certain features. We kind of wanted to make it a fun experience, mm-hmm. as well. So, for example, if you're a Windows Azure developer, we have, you know, a Get on the Bus achievement, which means you use Service Bus. We have achievements for, you know, when you're using code editors or specific Windows Phone features. Isolated storage and so on. So there's a lot of things that we kind of encourage people to either try different features, learn features of Visual Studio itself. So like UML features, there's I think it's a UML God achievement.
Nice.
That people use features that they wouldn't have necessarily thought of, like, let me go research how that feature actually works.
That's cool. I can't wait until gamification is just everywhere. I'm so going to win this game. All right, man. We'll see you next week on This Week on Channel 9.
Thanks, everyone.